This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, November 19th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. It's important to have a plan as you make your holiday season charitable donations. That's coming up shortly, but right now, it's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. In this segment, we're discussing ditching the family home and spending the holidays at a hotel or resort. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home is Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago. Cindy, thank you for joining us today. And the appeal of spending the holidays at a hotel or resort is self-evident, starting with the fact that you don't have to clean anything up when you're done.
Well, I'm a big believer in that, and that is a big reason to go. But, you know, there are a lot of other reasons to go, too. If you're not, I mean, if you're hosting, that's the biggest, of course. But if you're not hosting, if you're a guest at Thanksgiving or Christmas, and you think that, you know, you've got a better idea and you'd rather you find a great deal on a last minute cruise or an amazing overnight price on a luxury hotel that includes a massage, you've got a pretty good argument for why you don't want to be at Christmas or Thanksgiving dinner.
Now, is it too late to book that Christmas or Thanksgiving getaway, or do you have to do it now?
Well, I would have said yes, but, you know, before I got on the horn today, I did a little looking around, and I was surprised to find out there's some amazing last-minute deals on cruises out of Florida. One cruise I saw that was for 7 days was like $800, and then I looked up the cost of a flight from Chicago to Miami, and it was about $800. So I think you might want to stay closer to home if you don't already have a plane ticket to go somewhere. But, you know, $1,600 for a week-long cruise, including a flight, is not a terrible deal either if it's going to allow you to avoid, you know, maybe Uncle Charlie, whose politics make being at Thanksgiving dinner a little rough.
Now, let's talk about Uncle Charlie for a second, because if you do shuffle off to some warmer destination to spend the holidays at a hotel, there could be some hurt feelings because there are lots of traditions and families hold them sacred. And if you're not there and you say, look, we had a great deal on a hotel at Marco Island, we'll see you next year. How do you smooth over hurt feelings if you go to the resort and leave the family behind?
Well, I'm a big believer in early and honest is best when it comes to communication with families, especially difficult communications. It might be a little late to be early on telling someone you're not going to be at Thanksgiving dinner, but it's probably not too late to have that conversation about Christmas. So if you're going to do it, I think the important thing is to focus on why you're going as opposed to focus on you don't want to be with Uncle Charlie. That's just going to cause lots of hurt feelings. But if you can make the argument, hey, you know, I have 4 days off and this is the only vacation I'm going to get this year and I found this amazing deal, most families that love you are not going to hold that against you. But it's all about how you present it. I think if you're making it about you and your need and ability to get away, it's a lot different than just saying I don't want to be with Uncle Charlie or someone else.
And by the way, for purposes of our scenario here, Cindy, Uncle Charlie is a card-carrying communist. That's why people have a hard time getting along with him. Cindy Richards, editor... He gets very mad about the capitalistic elements of Christmas. Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago, thank you for joining us today.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
As the end of the year approaches, you may be thinking about giving to charity, and it's a good time to have a strategy when doing so. Let's get some direction from Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder, Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management, and author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. When it comes to maximizing your return on life, there is no better way to do that than by supporting financially and maybe with through the gift of time causes that are near and dear to your heart.
Yes, actually that is. And it is a time that a lot of people are thinking about donations, and the charitable organizations certainly will benefit. But there might be a way that your listeners can benefit too by giving these charitable contributions in tax-efficient ways. And there's many ways to do it. Would you like me to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, let's talk about the tax implications and then also being very careful about your donations, because you want to make sure if you are donating, you do it one time if you choose to do so, and you're not getting stuck with recurring payments.
Exactly. You want to make sure that you can afford the donation, first of all, and you don't want to obviously go on credit or anything like that for the donation. But one really great strategy for charitable donations is to look at your portfolios, and stocks have been up this year, and you may be what's called out of balance, which means you had a plan of your stock and bond allocation. Your stocks have been overweighted or out of balance, and they probably have appreciated. So if you have donations in the 1,000 or 2,000 plus range, you can actually donate appreciated stock to the charitable organization. They all have instructions on how to do that. And by donating appreciated stock, you alleviate the capital gain. So it's a win-win for the charitable organization and a win-win for you. Now, a lot of people have smaller donations, so they want to give 100 to this or 200 for that. And administratively, giving appreciated stock can be very cumbersome. So there's a concept called donor-advised funds, or DAF. You may hear it as DAF. They're available through many custodians like Schwab, Fidelity. Many organizations have donor-advised funds. And how it works, it's almost like a checkbook for charities. So you donate into this donor-advised fund. The beauty is of it is you get the deduction in the year that you donate. So if you're having to the donor advised fund, so if you're having a great year, which hopefully a lot of your listeners are in your profession, or it might be the year before you retire and you're at a high tax bracket, you can put 2, 3, or 4 years worth of donations into this fund. With the new tax laws, you may not be itemizing, but by chunking or putting a larger amount into the donor advised fund, you can get the benefit of a deduction. Again, talk with your tax advisor. I'm not giving tax advice here. The other point is that you can give highly appreciated stock into the donor advised fund. So not only are you possibly getting the deduction, you're eliminating the capital gain. It keeps track of all your donations. Like you mentioned, you may have forgotten that you donated already to the organization. By having a donor advised fund, it's all online. You go online, you make the donations, and you can actually keep track of them. And it's just a really nice way to get your charitable donations out all online, really easy. I always say it saved our marriage because we're always looking for the receipts at the end of the year. Here you just get one receipt for the deduction.
Now in general, Sherry, at the end of the year, is that when the bulk of the charitable giving takes place? And that end-of-year donation spree, is that just because people are feeling generous with the holiday season in the air, or they do it because they want to with tax implications top of mind?
It's top of mind because the deadline is at the end of the year. So if you want to get a deduction in 2024, you need to do it by the end of the year. But I will caution people that you should start thinking about it now, because it could take time if you're donating stock or opening a donor advised fund there could be time and you don't want to miss the deadline because something is in process. And all charities get very, very busy. And often, a lot of times, the last couple of weeks of the year, some of the nonprofits are on vacation, people aren't there. So think about your donations now. Couple other quick tips. You may have an employer match for donations. So look at your employee benefits. So that could be a win-win for the charitable organization. You may work for a company where you own a lot of the company stock. We call that maybe a concentrated position in a particular company. So you might want to donate some of that stock just to reduce your exposure, and you may have large gains in that. So that's another good way to donate. And another way is if you're, there are some advantages to being over 70 and a half, and it's called a qualified charitable distribution. You sometimes hear QCD. And here you can give up to $100,000 from your IRA. There's a lot of tax advantages. I don't have time to go through it. Check with your advisor. But if you're over 70 and a half, you can use your IRA to make a donation directly to a charitable institution, which would reduce your any income future on your IRA. So lots of strategies where it could be a win-win for the organization and yourself. But I hope that you will all think long and hard and come up with your own charitable plan, because a lot of organizations obviously need money right now. And they always do, but donating is a gift that keeps on giving. So,
well, some great advice. Sherry Grucco-Rikus, co-founder, Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
As you endeavor to move forward in your career, it's important to build relationships within the workplace. We're joined by Sandy Torsha, Vice Chair of Talent and Culture at KPMG in Chicago. Sandy, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like a delicate balancing act when it comes to having work friends, because it's nice to have some people you can hang out with and bounce ideas off of, especially when you're just starting out in your career. But it could also be problematic going forward, too.
Yeah, thanks for having me this afternoon. You know, our firm just did a study, and the results of the study told us that it is super important to make meaningful friendships at work. And it's important right now more than ever, because we're seeing a lot of loneliness, a lot of burnout, a lot of disengagement, and having meaningful friendships in the workplace has proven to be an undervalued solution for addressing many of those issues. But you're exactly right. I mean, not only could it be problematic, but there's certainly, you know, an evolution in how we work over the past several years. We're relying more on technology in how we interact day to day. That leads to connections that might seem less authentic as the work has shifted. But we're seeing that people want their employers to focus on a culture that fosters these friendships at work.
And it's also, it seems like the value of having workplace friends was really kind of driven home during the pandemic shutdowns, when everybody was working from home and interacting with their coworkers through a Zoom screen. I feel like once you got to maybe October or November of 2020, people would, you know, pay hundreds of thousands of dollars just to have a Miller Lite with one of their old coworkers in person.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, our survey is telling us that folks want employers to invest in, you know, kind of real ways to have connections outside of work, right? So if you think about, we're entering the holiday season, having holiday parties. One of the things that our firm does is we have every year a community impact day where we focus on volunteering at nonprofits across the country. And we have things like our Culture Champions Network that encourages people to come together, people that are committed to being ambassadors of our firm's culture, to come together and really demonstrate what it looks like to work on our firm's core values. We also have business resource groups. These are affinity groups that enable you to connect with people that have similar backgrounds and interests as you do. So it's really thinking about how to evolve connections beyond those organic connections that you're going to get in the course of day-to-day work to things beyond that, that will give you an opportunity to meet different people in a different kind of environment. And like you said, that's become so much more important after we emerged from the pandemic.
Sandy Torsha, Vice Chair of Talent and Culture at KPMG in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, a family cruise for everyone, and that includes the dog.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Mike Krauser. Flyers turn up in a dozen cities in Indiana calling for the mass deportation of immigrants.
The president of Russia rewrites his country's nuclear doctrine. In Travel Tuesday, going on a cruise with the family dog in tow. And more people are deciding to enjoy their Thanksgiving meal at a restaurant. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed right now. The Dow is down 107 points. The NASDAQ is up 138. The S&P 500 is up 15. We have 58 degrees right now in Chicago under cloudy skies. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Literature claiming to be from the Ku Klux Klan targets immigrants in Northwest Indiana. The details from WBBM's Mike Krauser.
The text on the flyers reads, "Leave now, avoid deportation." There's a drawing of Uncle Sam with a leg outstretched toward a family as though he's kicking them out. Phil Waite saw them. He spoke to WSBT in South Bend.
You know, this kind of sentiment's out there. I know it's out there. I know there are people who feel this way, so that's not surprising. But it's just really shocking to have it come to your doorstep.
Cities where the flyers have been found include South Bend, Valparaiso, Goshen, Michigan City, Elkhart, and Plymouth, among others. Mike Krauser, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed into law changes to his country's nuclear doctrine. Moscow will now consider a conventional attack on Russia by any nation that's supported by a nuclear power a joint attack. The move comes after President Biden gave Ukraine the okay to strike targets inside Russia using American-supplied long-range weapons. CBS's Holly Williams has the latest on the Russian invasion.
The Ukrainian city of Odessa has been hit by Russian strikes twice in 2 days. Ukrainian officials say that 10 people were killed yesterday in a drone and missile attack on a residential neighborhood. The day before, the power grid in Odessa was targeted, destroying several homes.
The war has reached the 1,000-day mark. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And this is our first conversation since the election. So let's talk about the macroeconomic picture as we change administrations in Washington come January. What are some of the economic risks that will be on the plate of the Trump administration as they take office in 2 months?
Well, one thing, just to touch on the financial markets, what we saw, Rob, is the stock market reacted positively to the election. The Treasury bond market responded with yields going higher, bond prices going down. So the one general observation I would make, Rob, is there are high expectations that Trump will make changes that will be beneficial for the U.S. economy. And I think those expectations are probably elevated and not likely to be coming to fruition as quickly as people maybe assume now. Things like the budget deficit, there are some fiscal hawks within the Republican Party. So I just think that the worst fears of those on the left and the optimism on the right is probably overdone, and that the changes will be slower than what people expect. And I think that has an impact for the stock market to the extent it is expecting a lot of good things to happen quickly. At some point in time, there'll be some disappointment.
And let's talk for a little bit about just the nation's balance sheet. And this is something that you and others have really touched on in the last 5 years. Let's extend it all the way out to the beginning of the COVID financial relief that was provided to people once all those job losses took place in March and April of 2020. And that is the economy has been very strong over the past 3 years. I mean, GDP growth has been strong. People are working and paying taxes. But that has not done much to improve the nation's balance sheet. And what kind of spillover effects will that have going forward?
Well, it's a great question. It's a difficult question in the sense of the steps required to addressing it. And very simply, last year, the budget deficit was 6.5% of GDP. GDP grew 3%. So you could make the case that all that growth was basically as a result of deficit spending. Outstanding debt now is $35 trillion. There's only, I think, two ways to address this problem, Rob. And what it means is higher taxes and cutting spending. That is the only way you can get the budget back on some semblance of stability. And obviously, both those things would probably have a negative impact on GDP growth. So in the short run, you have to be willing to experience some pain in the belief that longer term, this is what is in the best interest of the country. I don't see either party embracing that.
And it seems like even going back decades, there has just been this belief that deficits really don't matter. And that has been going on probably since the dawn of the 21st century. That's been the prevailing belief politically.
Mm-hmm. It has. And, you know, what I would say, okay, in 1980, debt as a percent of GDP, in other words, the total amount of federal debt was 30% of GDP. So if the economy was $10 trillion, we had $3 trillion of debt. As we just talked about. Now it's up to 125%. And the point I would make is we got to this place because Republicans like to cut taxes, and then the net result is enough revenue doesn't pay for those tax cuts. And the Democrats like to spend a lot of money no matter what. And so it's that combination that has gotten us to this point. I'll note that during President Trump's first administration, prior to the pandemic in 2020, the budget deficit as a percent of GDP went up every year. Then President Biden, excluding 2021 because of the pandemic, in 22 and beyond, it has continued to go up. So the numbers are very clear, at least from my perspective, Rob, is neither party has shown much fiscal discipline, and that's why we're in this position that we are, which at some point in time will make it difficult for us, if you will, to sell the necessary bonds we need to fund the government at low rates. And the risk is as treasury yields go up, that's only going to increase the interest expense within the budget deficit. So we're approaching that point where I think it is going to be crucial and that we can't ignore it.
Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com in San Diego. Thank you for joining us today.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking, and a dog-friendly cruise is set to sail from Florida a year from now. Let's learn more from Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator of JetSetJulietTravels.com. Find her on social media at JetSetJulietTravels. Juliet Travels. Juliet, thank you for joining us today. And for those of us who are dog lovers, it's always heartbreaking to leave the dog with the pet sitter or at the kennel or wherever that dog is sheltered before you leave. So this cruise line, they're leaving from Tampa, and they want to eliminate that heartbreak by allowing you to bring the dog along on the trip.
I am absolutely freaking out about this. I think I might have mentioned this maybe to you, but I am one of those crazy ladies who like flies around the country doing animal rescue work. So this is like right in my wheelhouse. And it's funny. Have you ever tried traveling with a pet, Rob?
Well, we have never brought. I mean, we had a beta fish, and the fish was ill-tempered, so it never really it didn't travel well.
Things,
sadly,
yeah, they tend to fly like crazy out of those tanks. Well, obviously, traveling with pets is challenging. If you've never tried it, you know it already is challenging. It can get expensive. You know, you have to pay for pet fees for the flights, the hotels. There's usually a limit to how many you can bring, the size. You know, so it's just one thing after another, which is why, not surprisingly, a lot of people simply have not traveled with their pets. Out of every 10 pet owners, Rob, how many do you think have adjusted their travel habits because they're feeling like you, like they're worried or if they feel guilty about leaving Fido home? Out of 10, how many do you think?
I would say 10.
Well, it's actually 4, which actually surprised
really?
Me. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. But, I mean, look, 7% of pet owners only consider destinations where they can bring pets. So this Margaritaville at Sea, which is part of the Margaritaville brand, is launching this one-off cruise, like you said, on their new ship, the Islander. This happens next November, so you've got basically a year. There's going to be dog training, dog shows, costume contests, parades. I mean, look, let's be honest. I don't know. You've never been to a Margaritaville, I assume. Have you? I don't know why I said that.
I have been to a Margaritaville. Yeah, it's okay. it's like walking inside to a Jimmy Buffett song. I mean, fun will be had.
Exactly. Well, that's what I was going to say. You don't engage the Margaritaville brand unless you like to party. So I have a feeling this cruise is definitely going to be a spectacle. Even if you're not really into the partying process, there is pampering. They're going to do doggy massages, dog grooming, dog splash stations. They'll have guest speakers. They'll have all sorts of, you know, swag. There's going to be some sort of relief station on your cabin's balcony. And apparently everybody who has their dog, there's like a designated pet butler. So Fifi will feel like a queen. I mean, it's like, this is the greatest thing. And you know, by the way, these are legit ships. I think there are only two in the Margaritaville at Sea line at this point. But they've received accolades from Condé Nast, the Reader's Choice Awards. You know, they're big ships. They've got 12 decks, 2,650 passengers. This particular cruise, it's not clear if it's going to Mexico, Belize, Jamaica, and Grand Cayman. Probably one or several of those. There are lots of restaurants and everything. I seriously am going to look into this. I think the registrations are going to start next month, and that's when we'll get the pricing information. And I'm told there's a limit of like 250 dogs. So you got to jump on this. You have to apply, you have to be approved, and then you have to show your dogs are healthy and up to date on their vaccinations. But I mean, this is amazing to me. I think this is going to be a real trend. Honestly.
Well, it's very important to have your animal companionship with you, Juliet, especially if you're searching for that lost shaker of salt. Juliet Huddy.
Oh, my God. Nice. Get on, bump.
I had that plan since this morning.
I love it.
I leave it all on the road. Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator, JetSetJulietTravels.com. Find her on social media at JetSetJulietTravels. Join us this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, taking the cooking stress out of Thanksgiving by letting someone else do it.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
There's a trend of people choosing to go the restaurant route instead of cooking a Thanksgiving meal. Let's check in with Doug Roth, founder and president of Playground Hospitality in Chicago. Doug, thank you for joining us today. And as we talked about earlier in the hour about going to a hotel or resort for Christmas, going to a restaurant for Thanksgiving is an idea that sells itself in that you don't have to worry about cooking, don't have to worry about preparation, don't have to worry about making room in your fridge for a big old turkey, and then someone else takes care of the cleanup.
Totally, Rob. Actually, I don't know where you're going, but I can tell you at this point that if you're going to stay home, you're in the minority. 57%, according to a NRA study, which is the National Restaurant Association, say that people will be going out to eat. Another 50% of those who are staying in plan on ordering from restaurants to bring in like the main meal, like the turkey or the dressings and or desserts. So big numbers. And obviously things are changing, especially with millennials and Zs. They're just not into Thanksgiving like the boomers have been.
Now this has been around for a while. I mean, the idea of going out to a restaurant is not necessarily foreign because it was over 20 years ago, back when I used to work on Thanksgiving Day in Milwaukee. My family actually came up and we took advantage of the Thanksgiving buffet at the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee, and it was outstanding. But this was going on 20 years ago. So clearly this has got to be one of the bigger, if not biggest, day of the restaurant year.
As far as dining out, yes. It almost rivals Mother's Day, but it certainly is big, certainly bigger than Christmas at this point. And what we're seeing is that there's obviously a paradigm that's happening that where people are just saying, hey, we want to have it easier for ourselves. There's also something, too, that's interesting as well. I have a brother-in-law, for instance, that always wants to talk politics. And there's always a discussion that gets fairly heated. So you go to a restaurant or you go to a hotel, you're not going to have that heated discussion in the middle of a dining room.
Or so you think, but yes, decorum usually allows everybody to stay on their best behavior. And oh, by the way, I mean, maybe we should come up, have a segment later on, Doug, about conversational alternatives. If political discussion gets heated, you know there are going to be fights. Talk about something with no emotion whatsoever, like how to fix the White Sox or something like that. That could certainly help.
Or how to raise children. Either one of those, exactly.
Yeah, two discussions with no emotional triggers whatsoever. But none. Also, very quickly, Doug, when it comes to the people who are working on Thanksgiving, I mean, obviously, if you're a cook, if you are a line server, if you are waiting tables on Thanksgiving, you are away from your family while other families are enjoying their dinner. So what does etiquette say you should do gratuity-wise for those who are working on Thanksgiving?
I give as much as you feel that obviously one that the evening or the afternoon presented for you, and hopefully it was something that was very special, and hopefully you'll be very, very kind to those that are working, like you were at the Pfister and I was at my father's place down Roth's. So I get it, and you get it, and hopefully our listening audience will also take part as far as being very kind.
Doug Roth, founder and president of Playground Hospitality in Chicago, thank you for joining us today.